Welcome in to the FWFB Football Podcast. We're talking running backs tonight. Joining me, Jody Smith of Fantasy Pros. How's it going, Jody?
It's going fantastic, man. I appreciate you having me. We're packing up over here in Texas, getting ready to head east for a vacation in Florida in a couple days here. So we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, it's always a rite of passage for the kids to get packed into the car and driven 10-plus hours. So hope they enjoy it as much as you're going to.
Well, we'll see. That's my wife's main concern. You know, I have an autistic son, so we've never had him in a car more than, say, maybe three and a half hours going to San Antonio. So this is going to be more than three times that. It should be a 10 to 12-hour trip. So it should be interesting. In my opinion, though, yeah. I think he's going to be a trooper. I think he's going to love it because the kid loves maps. As everyone on Twitter probably knows, he has a little license plate collection, and you know, he loves all that stuff. So I think he's going to absolutely love it, and we're not going to have any problems with him at all.
Yeah, that's quite the collection. Did he get the 50th state?
He didn't, actually. You know, what's funny is he's got all 49 states, and the 50th state that he's missing is Mississippi, which we're just happen to be driving through in a couple days. So we'll take care of it. So, yeah, that'll get him his 50th state.
That's perfect, yeah. All right, so just the rundown for tonight, guys. We're going to talk a little bit of general strategy. Then we're going to go through the tiers like we did last week with quarterbacks. Do a toss-up for the round four ADP with Brandon Cooks. And then we'll wrap up with sleepers like usual. You can find me on Twitter at @roto_wan, W-A-N. And Jody, hit us with your Twitter for anybody who wants to have a top-notch follow for stats.
At Jody Smith NFL.
Nice and easy. There you go. All right, so to kick off the strategy segment here, I'm going to give my thoughts on zero running back, and for that matter, zero wide receiver. And then, you know, you can tell me how you feel about that, Jody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this year's an interesting year. Yeah, running backs are back in fashion. They're going fast and furious off the board. People got the feeling that they need a running back. They got to get him first, second round. A lot of people are even double dipping. That's the best time to do zero running back is when everyone else is taking running backs. You're going to get better wide receivers. So don't be scared to use it. You know, that said, this is the running back preview show. So we're going to definitely talk in the other direction if you are somebody who does feel like they're in need of running backs early. What I will say is my opinion on zero anything, zero running back or zero wide receiver, is one of the main things at work there behind the scenes is that you're focusing your draft capital on a position early on. You're making sure that you're going to get top-notch production from one of those two positions. That's in turn going to allow you to search on the waiver wire and the late rounds in your draft for high upside players. So if you spread that around, you know, you take a wide receiver, a running back, a wide receiver, you know, tight end, you're kind of mixing it all over the place. You've got to get most of those to hit right, which can definitely happen if you're, you know, sharp and you've got the rankings correct. But, you know, even if you do, injuries happen, things like that. Things could just go wrong for you. So if you focus on just wide receivers for the first three rounds and you have three great wide receivers, even if one of them is injured, you're still going to have two great wide receivers and you'll be able to weather that storm. And then you'll have also focused at the end of your draft on running backs with breakout potential. We'll talk about some of those later on. And you're going to work the waiver wire for running backs almost exclusively. So you're going to get more tickets in that lottery for the breakout running back versus picking up a running back, a wide receiver, a tight end this week, that week, and the other. So that's something that I don't think is talked about very often, that, you know, by concentrating on one or the other area, you're allowing a focus throughout the season. So same thing can happen with, you know, zero wide receiver. You could go three running backs early if you have, you know, two running back slots and a flex, and then focus on wide receivers down the road and breakouts. It's a little bit harder to do because wide receivers don't pop like running backs do. But people are after running backs at a higher rate than they are wide receivers, just from a standpoint of any running back that could possibly have any opportunity is going to get snagged on the waiver wire. wide receivers, you know, they're going to get claimed for sure, but it's not that same singular job that people are going to go nuts for. So, you know, give me your take on that, Jody. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with most of what you said. Let me give the boring response of my particular strategy. And Mike, as you know, you've probably been like myself. You've been mock drafting since January or February because it's just part of what mm-hmm. we do. It's actually necessary for us to gather this sort of material, to have research basis for what we're writing about and what we're going to be looking at and analyzing heading into the draft with team needs, et cetera. So it's necessary for us to, you know, go through all these things early. I'll go with the approach of being open-minded for your draft. I think if you enter any draft with any dead set strategy, whether it's I'm going zero QB, zero RB, zero wide receiver, you're doing yourself a disservice because what you need to understand is the most important asset to have in any draft is flexibility. Because if you have 12 people in a draft and 11 of them are going zero RB, that means, you know, Antonio Brown's going to slide really, really far. And you just have to be able to, it's value-based drafting. It's really the strategy you want to go with there. What we've seen here with running backs is, you know, fantasy just happens to be a reactionary hobby where last year nobody wanted anything to do with Todd Gurley because he had gotten hurt or wasn't that great the year before. And then he was fantastic. So all of us were getting Todd Gurley sometimes in the third round last year, and how did that worked out great for everyone. So, you know, again, it's being proactive instead of reactive. And I'm going to be honest, most of the drafts that I've done, and it's been a lot of mock drafts, I can almost guarantee you I'm not going to take a tight end. Perhaps if Rob Gronkowski slips into the third round, you start thinking about it. You can argue Travis Kelce should be taken above Gronkowski. That's just a personal choice. I'm generally the kind of person who's going to disregard tight end, but I do not like the teams that I have assembled when I skip running backs, except in PPR. Now, if you're going straight PPR league, I think it's possible to start off with three wide receivers, first three rounds, depending on who slides into round three. And you can get running backs in the fourth through sixth round if you're able to concentrate on just catching those pass catching running backs that have, you know, the high floor and the little risk. But the caveat there is you're not going to have that home run hitter and you have to hit on them. I mean, you have to get lucky. You talked about being aggressive on waivers that, you know, obviously, but if you are the kind of person that ends up deciding that, you know what, I can't pass up Julio Jones here, you know, in the middle of this end of the second round, I got to take him in the third round. Man, I really like Diggs or I like Thielen. Whoever you get in the third, Allen Robinson, I just got to have him. Well, that's cool, you know, if you start off there. But you've got to start looking there, you know, in the fourth round. You got to start taking guys like the rookie running backs with Darius Geis, Rashad Penny, Kenyon Drake, Sony Michel. Maybe in the fifth and the sixth round, you start looking at guys like Deion Lewis, Lamar Miller, Tarik Cohen and Chicago. These kind of guys that are going to end up catching a ton of passes. Those are the kind of, you know, home run swings you need to be trying to take if you decide to concentrate on receivers early. But I mean, didn't mean to get on that tangent there, but
roster some.
Didn't mean to get off on that tangent there. But for the most part, I like to be, you know, open-minded in a draft. Given a choice, I'm going to push the running backs to the priority just because it's so much easier to find depth at wide receiver because, you know, like you said, there's two or three sometimes significant contributors per team. Whereas in running back, it's a lot harder to find them. So, you know, given a choice, if everything's equal, you're going to take the running back, but, you know, flexibility remains, the biggest priority for me for any draft.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you have to let the draft dictate to you where you're going. You know, so don't go into it and say, this is what I'm going to do and not match the personnel that are available to what the strategy is that you had in mind. And the other thing you brought up was, you know yourself. If you're someone who is adept at working the waiver wire, at reading the tea leaves and running back committees, things like that, then you're definitely a candidate for somebody who can do zero RB. If you're not, if you just never seem to hit on that guy that breaks out, it's probably not for you. And another aspect of it is risk management, because you're going to be nervous as heck going into a season, like you said, with some of these guys who are only satellite backs or kind of boring, the more boring names. And, you know, that's, it's gonna you'll feel pretty uneasy, and you could end up making some rash moves and undermining, you know, the foundation that you laid. So
yeah, knowing your league mates important too. If you're listening to a fantasy football podcast here in late June or early July, you're probably in that upper tier of people who take it seriously and, you know, really, really successful at it. So know your league. Are you in a league with a bunch of knuckleheads and you know that you can get all your sleeper running backs and the rookies later, then shoot, load up on wide receiver. But if you're in a league with a bunch of sharks that know what they're doing and it's a really, really competitive league, well, then, you know, that's where you want to know. In addition to knowing who you like and what you want to do, if you know your league mates, then, you know, be proactive, not reactive.
Yeah, and just offhand, you know, the feeling I've gotten so far from mocking and doing best balls is around pick 9 or 10 is where I found myself getting into the zero running back kind of strategy. There's guys there that are good wide receivers in the first round, and the running backs are kind of a cut below until you get to 11 or 12.
Yep, you're starting to see Antonio Brown's regularly lasting until the fifth pick and sometimes even the sixth pick. I think if someone wants to take Alvin Kamara in the top five, it's hard to argue about that. But yeah, what that ends up doing is having, Antonio Brown possibly there halfway through the first round, and he's, you know, arguably the best player in fantasy football and has been over the last 3 years. And it's just the supply and demand of the running backs are causing those wide receivers to slip. I mean, we're seeing Julio Jones regularly falling middle to the, you know, sometimes even the latter part of the second round. And, you know, guys that would normally you would expect to be second round receivers are, you know, slipping into the third round because those running backs are getting pushed up. So,
yeah, I've got quite a few starts with either Beckham or Hopkins in the first, followed by Julio or, Michael Thomas, Keenan Allen, one of those guys as my first two. Have you done any best balls where you've fired off a zero wide receiver at all, or wide receiver heavy draft?
Oh yeah, I've been doing my fantasy league tens now that they've switched over to my buddies at Fanball. I've done several of them. I've actually had at least one going pretty much constantly for the last pretty much since they began. I want to say that was 2 or 3 months ago, and I found myself plenty of times. Gosh, there's one that just wrapped up where, it's funny. We just mentioned that earlier. I ended up grabbing Adam Thielen as my third receiver. So obviously I went wide receiver, and then Thielen. And I want to say that it was, I got Julio Jones and Keenan Allen. So, I mean, a little risk there with Allen, obviously staying healthy. But, when you look at that's three guys that are pretty safe bets to approach triple digit receptions. I'm in great shape, and in that particular draft, I ended up getting those running backs that I mentioned towards the top there. I got Deion Lewis. I got Tarik Cohen. I did get Duke Johnson. I want to say I went with three running backs in a row, and, you know, I was just doing nothing but swinging for running backs that are going to catch a ton of passes. So it was a great start. You know, it's just another example of me completely ignoring tight end, but that's going to happen.
In a best ball, I tend to do the same thing. I don't like to think about tight ends till a good bit later.
I just don't like the way my teams come together when I spend a third round pick on a tight end. I just don't like it. So I don't do it very often.
Yep. So we'll jump over to the running back tiers here. I'll read off the names of the tier, and we'll pick one or two of each that kind of intrigue us or are a bit controversial. So tier one, I've got David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott. Is there one that you would pick as the number one running back out of that tier?
It's hard to pass on Gurley, but, you know, at the same time, I'm actually starting to lean a little bit towards suggesting Elliott deserves to close that gap with Gurley, simply because Elliott's been – he's just been such a workhorse. He's never even showed up on the injury report here in the pros, and he was really, really healthy at Ohio State. So that kind of stuff matters. Absolutely. I mean, I think he scored, 9 touchdowns in the 10 games he played last year. The dude's great. But you know, when you start looking at injury concerns, you think about it. Le'Veon Bell, I mean, what's not to like? He's just amazing when he's on the field. The problem is just whole contract thing. It becomes a concern. And then in a dynasty standpoint, I'm a little scared of Le'Veon Bell because I'm pretty certain that he's not going to be back in Pittsburgh unless he's willing to come way down on his contract demands. It's something risky. And, you know, you could consider moving Alvin Kamara up into that tier. I don't know that I have him there, but, you know, I'm not going to disagree with your top four. It is a pretty definitive tier of top four, and it's been that way for, you know, a few months now. So it's a pretty solid group.
And I want to say this about Gurley. I definitely think he's in good shape. He's going to have a good year. But if he's not the guy you want to take at number one, you don't have to. Don't feel like because he's, you know, most people's consensus number one that you got to take him. If one of those other guys we mentioned, if that's your guy, get him. Don't worry about this guy was number one on all these, you know, analyst rankings. Go ahead and get the guy you think you want to have your season with, because yeah, David Johnson was the number one consensus ranking last year, and that sunk a ton of people's seasons. So, you know, if you were really high on Antonio Brown in a PPR, or you thought Le'Veon Bell was the best running back and you wanted to go running back, you know, you could have salvaged your season just by being a little different there at number one or number two. All right, so then tier number two, we've got Kareem Hunt, Alvin Kamara, Saquon Barkley, and Leonard Fournette. Kind of a small tier. You know, these guys are all younger, so, you know, there's some questions there about, you know, sophomore slumps or a rookie in Barkley's case, but they're all in good situations. They're all mostly first rounders, maybe Fournette, beginning of the second round. Give me your take on Barkley, Jody.
Absolutely love the talent. They're going to put him in a position to be successful. I think he's a really, really good candidate to easily exceed 250 touches, maybe even get around 300. And if that's the case, he's going to easily be an RB1 as long as he stays healthy. There's no reason to think he's not going to be. I like him overall. I don't have haven't drafted him too much because when I've missed out on that tier of running backs that we just discussed at the top, I'm generally going to be attacking wide receiver at that point. There's no, you know, again, you can move Kamara into that top five, in my opinion, without a problem. Kareem Hunt starting to get overlooked. I actually was surprised when I looked at Kareem Hunt's stats. I forgot that he actually scored 10 touchdowns because he went through that stretch there in the middle of the season where he didn't do hardly anything. So you forget how great he was in September last year.
Leading rusher.
And Leonard Fournette, you know, it's a good lesson. I think we're going to talk about this a little bit later. But the concerns for Leonard Fournette coming out of LSU were he can't catch the ball. But see, people didn't understand. Just because he wasn't asked to catch the ball in college doesn't mean he can't do it. He actually ended up, I want to say he caught like 36 passes last year and he missed a game or two. So he's the kind of guy that's going to be able – and he looked pretty good as a pass catcher. He's the kind of guy that's going to be able to get you up around 45, 50 receptions. And, you know, he definitely is somebody that deserves to be considered in the bottom part of the first round. He's starting – you know, they said he lost a little bit of weight, so that, you know, that gives you a little interest too if he can be, you know, just a little bit faster.
With Barkley, you know, my only concern is that they may, I don't want to say ease him into the offense because that doesn't describe it accurately, but they may limit, you know, his touches to high teens or 20. We saw that with Ezekiel Elliott a little bit in his rookie year. He, you know, his first couple games, he only got 20 carries. With Barkley, he's got a little bit better receiving chops, so he's got some built-in floor there because of that. Do you have any concern, though, that, you know, they're going to just kind of let him take his time getting acclimated to the NFL?
I don't think so. I don't think that's what the Gettleman had in mind when they spent the number two pick on him. And he Barkley's he's a Marshall Faulk type of three-down talent. Touches aren't really a concern for me at all. Perhaps early on, they're going to try to use Jonathan Stewart a little bit. I wouldn't advise that. Maybe they'll give Jonathan Stewart a chance to say – what we all saw last year was that he looks kind of washed up. He was not a very good red zone runner. Those are numbers I've been working with in the last week. I've been tweeting out a lot about it. Jonathan Stewart was not good in the red zone, despite the touchdown numbers and the amount of touches that he got. And I don't think more time is going to be the issue there. New York's offensive line, although they're still trying to work with it, it's still a rebuilding process for them. So maybe early on we see Stewart get a lot of carries, but I think when he's piddling around 3.3 yards a carry, I just think that Barkley could, you know, at that point take over the league more. So touches, you're not really a concern for me. I mean, I like I said, I certainly see your point, but if he's not carrying the ball, he's going to be getting the ball, you know, in a variety of different ways, especially maybe even from the slot. They can move Sterling Shepard to the other side. And I'm really excited to actually watch how their offense plays out here in August, but it's not really a concern for me at all.
Yeah, they're trending in the right direction. And then, you know, Kareem Hunt's kind of the forgotten man in this tier. People, mm-hmm. He's being drafted in the first round, so it's hard to say that. But
yeah, even us, we didn't spend much time talking about him.
You know, he's a guy that had, you know, a great start, and then, like you said, a really tough middle of the season. People are remembering that because that's freshest in their mind. You know, when he was destroying defenses, that's what I'm remembering. If I can get that on any team, I'm happy to. I'm happy with any guy from this tier, but Hunt right now has a slight edge for me just because he's the only game in town for Kansas City from a running game, both passing and rushing out of the backfield. All right, tier number three. I've got Devonta Freeman, Melvin Gordon, Dalvin Cook, LeSean McCoy, Jerick McKinnon, and Jordan Howard. So this I kind of deem the risky tier. Taking a guy out of this tier could make or break your season. Anybody you see in this tier as a particular risk, Jody?
Risk? Let me tell you what. I don't want anything to do with LeSean McCoy this year. You're talking about – look, he's on the wrong side. He's at this point of his age of his career where he's at a point where things are about to start falling off for him. But the Bills, their schedule right out the gate, very, very tough. You're talking about one of the worst offensive lines in football, and you have a completely unsettled quarterback and probably the worst receiving core in football. Huge concerns for me. You're going to see a lot of loaded fronts for McCoy, and obviously he's going to be the main focal point for defenses to key on. He's been a proven workhorse, but man, he's just somebody that I've really been fading early this year. Melvin Gordon, go ahead.
Just real quick on McCoy. He played, I think, every game last season, maybe all but one, but a lot of them were with injuries and fairly, you know, significant injuries, lower body, hand, all kinds of stuff. And he gutted it out, but he wasn't as effective when injured. So, you know, even though he plays through a lot of it, he needs that shiftiness to be at his optimal level.
And those things rarely, start to get better when you get to be 30 years old, 29, 30, however old he is. They rarely start to, get better. And like I said, I have major concerns about the quality of the talent around him. He's just somebody that I find myself fading a lot. Going the other direction, Jordan Howard is a guy that everyone else seems to be fading except for me. I've been working for the last week on ProFootballReference.com has something called expected points. And it's first and goal from the one, you know, you have a 96, 99% chance of scoring. So there's expected points ratio based on it. Jordan Howard was the best, and it's not even close, the best red zone runner in the NFL last season. By my numbers, based on that stats that I just said, the Bears scored 20 more points last year than they would have they been given the ball to an average, you know, just anybody else at running back. Jordan Howard, to me, great red zone runner. Jeff Ratcliffe from Pro Football Focus said that he thinks Howard's a terrible fit for the Bears offense. And that's actually a risk. We actually don't know what's going to happen from Chicago's offense. They seem like they're going to go very high octane, very vertical. They're going to be very versatile. They're planning on putting Tariq Cohen all over the field. But I think if the Bears' offense is successful, all that's going to do is increase the scoring chances. And there's going to be times when they have a lead. And Jordan Howard, somebody to me that's starting to creep up to me ahead of LeSean McCoy. He's becoming a guy that I want to start looking at there in that RB12, RB13 range. And when he typically falls into the third round, I'm happy to take Jordan Howard like as my RB2. Of course, the caveat is he's not going to do a lot as a pass catcher, and that's the risk right. that you take. So you're going to need those touchdowns. But by my projections and things, I think they're going to come. So I think from what I'm looking at, I think Howard has a decent shot at getting into double digit touchdowns this year.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the Bears have obviously spent a lot of their offseason addressing the vertical attack issues, you know, the receivers, tight end, that sort of thing. And, you know, Matt Nagy's coming from an offense that is a passing offense. But people underestimate that Andy Reid likes to run the ball. You know, we'll see what Matt Nagy profile's like. But, you know, it's not like the old days of the greatest show on turf where they just threw the ball a ton. They run the ball, too. You know, Andy Reid does like to run the ball, especially when he can do it effectively with a guy like Jordan Howard. You know, saying Andy Reid, assuming that Matt Nagy has a fairly similar approach. And like you said, Jordan Howard's a battering ram. If he runs the ball effectively, he's going to get all he can handle, I think. And then the last guy to touch on for me is Devonta Freeman. He's always forgotten about. Mm-hmm. He falls into the third round all the time, and it seems like every year I draft him in the third round a whole bunch.
Yep, and you should be happy to get him too. You know, another guy I didn't want to – Melvin Gordon, a little touchdown dependent. We saw 2 years ago when he scored none, and then all of a sudden he jumped up and had a great year. He's going to be a little touchdown dependent, but you know he also is obviously going to be really, really good as a pass catcher too. Freeman and Gordon, I'm not going to disagree with your rankings for them in that tier. After that becomes a risk because along with LeSean McCoy, you have Jerick McKinnon, who he's the sexy name. He's the guy that everyone's targeting right now. But to me, I think people are way overvaluing San Francisco players in general right now. So
yeah,
to take McKinnon in this tier, you're probably bypassing a more qualified back. Like I would probably rather take Jordan Howard maybe than McKinnon. I don't know. That's touch and go. I'd like to get a little piece of both of them. But Dalvin Cook, another guy, a little bit of risk. We saw with Latavius Murray, you know, he was top five in red zone opportunities last year. I don't know, even with Dalvin Cook going back, I don't know that they won't stick with that. I think they plan on using Latavius Murray a little bit more than people are anticipating. Yeah. And if that is the role that they have in mind for him as a short yardage specialist, then it's going to keep Dalvin Cook's touchdown numbers down. And people are kind of, overlooking that. You know, all we have to go with is basically three plus games. You know, he was hurt pretty early in week four. So very limited sample size to go with Cook. I mean, I like the upside. I like him overall, but you know, this tier, like you said, it's full of risk. And if they were all available, I think you'd have it right with your ordering of Devonta Freeman, who has for the most part stayed pretty healthy, and he's going to continue to be their goal line guy. And you know, he's going to be a 50 catch guy as well.
All right, then jump into tier four. We got Darius Geis, Christian McCaffrey, Deion Lewis, Joe Mixon, Rashad Penny, Derrick Henry, and Jay Ajayi. You commented before we jumped on. I've got Geis pretty high, and I totally agree there. I think I've got him ranked here where you would have to draft him if you want to get him.
Well, the biggest concern with Geis is pass catching. If he shows in training camp that he's an adept pass catcher and he can get in there, then he's going to be up there in the top three. I don't know that even in that situation, I still don't know that I would not have him as maybe the third of this little group of rookies. I might rather would look at Penny and I even like Royce Freeman a little bit. I don't know that I would. I know I can get him, you know, a couple of rounds later, but I think Royce Freeman is walking into a starting job. And Sony Michel in New England, concern with him, of course, is if he fumbles and gets set on a bench. But there's a lot of value here with little pass catching backs. Christian McCaffrey, another guy that typically is going to be a second rounder. If he slips out of the second round, then now you're talking value because he's just going to be so heavily featured as a pass catcher.
Super reliable in a PPR.
Deion Lewis, another guy who you can usually get in the fifth round. I actually agree with you here. I have Deion Lewis at around RB20. I have him significantly higher than I have Derrick Henry. We talked a little bit before recording how, you know, my thoughts with Derrick Henry. I think he's being a little overvalued. I don't think he's garbage by any means, but to me, he needs roughly 25 points to get from last year. He was RB37 in PPR league. So for people to get him up into the 20s, you know, you're talking about a 25-30 point leap. Sounds like it's not that big of a deal, but he's got to get his touchdown numbers up. And, you know, for a guy that's his size, he's only got 5 touchdowns last year. He wasn't a big touchdown guy his first year either. So you got Marcus Mariota there who's going to call his own number a few times. So to consider taking Derrick Henry in this tier of running backs for me, you're putting a lot of faith in that he's going to be in for a big increase in touchdowns. He's not going to do much as a pass catcher, not with Deion Lewis there. Deion Lewis is fantastic as a pass catcher.
Deion
Lewis
actually, Titans.
And Lewis is underrated. You know,
the defense there is going to go under a transformation. You know, Vrabel is the new coach.
I like Tennessee's weapons. I think their pass, their receiving core in general is extremely underrated, but a lot of weapons there. So, like I said, for people to consider Derrick Henry as a reliable PPR RB2, you were putting a lot of faith that he's going to hit 8 or more touchdowns, and my projections aren't that friendly with him. So it's just something I don't see right now.
Yep. And then on Penny, you know, I just have a bad taste left in my mouth from the last couple of years of the Seattle coaching staff, their decisions at running back. I got the feeling that it's going to be more of a timeshare with Chris Carson or whoever else than people think.
Yeah, I don't blame you. They're already talking up Chris Carson. I mean, it may all just be hyperbole at this point. I mean, it's, you know, in June, it was OTAs and minicamp, so everything is hyperbole. But they've shown in the past that they're not willing to they got no problems if they feel like they made a mistake moving on really quickly. Remember when they signed Matt Flynn a few years ago in free agency and they had drafted Russell Wilson and realized, we're going to go with the better player here. And so Matt Flynn, he just became a forgotten player immediately. And obviously it was the right decision. And, you know, maybe Seattle, I mean, I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen, but what I am suggesting is if Rashad Penny doesn't earn his way, then they won't have a problem moving on quickly. Bigger problem for Seattle right now is that the offensive line, we saw how bad it was last year, and they've done very little to get better. To me, the Seahawks.
It's almost like they should have used their first round pick on you know, one of those interior linemen that went at the very beginning of the second round. Well, there was ready starters.
There was plenty of good running backs that, you know, in this class. Look at Denver. You know, they got Freeman in the third round. I mean, that would have been fine with me. But you know, they liked him, and it's fine. That's why I like Penny. He should have the opportunity. I don't like the offense necessarily. I don't like the. The defense got worse. That's not helping any matters. But overall, as a talent, I really, really liked him. And it's just got to understand that taking Penny, it's obviously with any rookie, not Barkley, but, you know, when you're not walking into a guaranteed 25-plus touch role, you know, it comes with a certain amount of risk.
And let me say this about Joe Mixon. I don't know if Joe Mixon is going to be good or not. And he's a little bit expensive, but I definitely don't want to have zero shares of him this season because he could be good. He could definitely break out and show that last year was just an entire lost season for all the Bengals, and he actually is the talented running back that people thought he was coming into the
NFL. It's hard for me to mix with Mixon to have I just kind of have a neutral opinion of him. It's like it's hard for me to justify with what we saw last year when he looked very ordinary. It's hard for me to justify moving him up, you know, 3 to 4 or 5 spots to where I'm going to grab him a lot. But it's also hard for me to argue that any of these other running backs really, really deserve to be listed or ranked ahead of him, because Mixon should have ample opportunity to pay off that, you know, the debt that we all spent on him last year. So the opportunity will be there. It's just that, you know, he's got to get, you know, the Bengals line's got to get a little better. Mixon's got to himself has got to get a little better. And you know, the supporting cast for Andy Dalton's got to get a little better. Like you said, it was a kind of a lost season for the Bengals and why they brought their coach back. It's beyond me, but hopefully things get a little better. But I don't have a lot of exposure to Mixon just because I don't feel like his like I said, it's hard for me to move him up or down very much. But I just don't feel like that. I feel more comfortable with many of the other guys that are in this range, so I generally avoid him.
Yeah, I haven't got any Mixon yet, so that's, I'm definitely going to have to buy some before the season starts. And then Jay Ajayi, as a Philadelphia Eagles fan, let me assure you, they have a running back by committee approach. Any analyst who's telling you Jay Ajayi is going to be the Eagles' workhorse this season, they don't know what Philadelphia does. It's been a running back committee for years and years now, and that's because Deuce Staley, the running backs coach, likes to do that. They've got Corey Clement. Got plenty of other faces. It's going to be, you know, I don't think Jay Ajayi is a bad investment, but people are drafting him sometimes in the third round thinking they're getting a workhorse back. You're not going to get it. He's going to have some great games and some games where he just disappears. So yep. Know that where you draft him.
Another concern for me is, you know, I've worked, like I said, on the expected points value. He was bottom three running back red zone as a red zone runner last year. He was bottom three. That's disconcerting for a guy that's got that punishing style and the size that he has. And when you're talking one of the best offensive lines in football, he should have been much more effective in that area. Corey Clement, on the other hand, actually was better than him in that area. So while they're talking up. While they're talking up Jay Ajayi, he's going to have more carries. He's going to be a bigger part of the offense. He might, but I agree with you. I think you're going to see Darren Sproles get mixed in. I think you're going to see Clement. Yep. I think it's just going to be a mess. Jay Ajayi might be the lead back in that. He might get the most touches, but I think he's going to have a hard time paying off his ADP with the touches he gets. And while Jay Ajayi can catch the ball a little bit, it doesn't seem like the Eagles like him in that role. So I don't know that he's going to be the kind of guy that's going to get over maybe, you know, 20, 25 receptions. So, you know, if you're not getting the touchdowns, it's hard to pay off RB2 value when you're not making a lot of receptions.
Yeah. All right. Then tier five names I have: Alex Collins, Kenyon Drake, Mark Ingram, Lamar Miller, Sony Michel, Royce Freeman, Ronald Jones, CJ Anderson. I'm really down on Alex Collins, mainly because everybody assumes that he's going to come in and just continue, you know, the strides he made last season. You know, you say he has fumbling issues and people counter with, well, he only fumbled the ball four times. Four times is a lot of fumbles for a back with limited workload throughout the season. And the first time it happens, he's going to get scrutinized. The coaching staff is going to, you know, probably give him a warning and say, hey, can't give the ball away. Second time it happens, all right, now we're going to be looking at a committee. What do you feel about Alex Collins, Jerry?
I'm going the other direction. I'm actually a big fan of him, but, you know, turnover, sure. I mean, that's a concern, as it is with any other player. The bigger concern for me is, what are they going to do with Kenneth Dixon when he comes back? Buck Allen, very underrated for the role he had last year. But Collins, once we got into week five and he finally got double-digit carries, he was really, really good last year. I think he would have – if you take out those first four games when he barely played, he would have been an 1,100-yard, eight-touchdown kind of guy. I want to say six of his touchdowns came in Baltimore's final seven or final eight games, carrying over a lot of that momentum. And he was actually sneaky busy as pass catcher. Now, with Kenneth Dixon and Buck Allen back, I don't know that that's going to carry over. I don't know that they're going to feature him a lot as a receiver. He showed a little bit that he can do it. I think he's going to be a pretty good red zone option. And the Baltimore offense, by my projections, is going to be a lot better. It's not saying much. You're talking about an offense that was, what, 25th, 28th, whatever it was last year. Maybe they move up, you know, seven, 10 spots. They get to the point where they're actually, average instead of mediocre to terrible. If that's the case, obviously you're going to be getting a lot more scoring opportunities. I really like Alex Collins. I think he's a really good value. He's somebody that, you know, for your tier here to have him down into those 20s, that's what I like to see, because my projections, I have him, I want to say, is my RB 16 or so. So when I'm seeing a guy that's got, you know, that much gap between where I value him and where he's going, then I know I'm going to own quite a few shares of him. So I'm actually optimistic.
If he doesn't lose any work, he'll be there.
Yeah, I'm optimistic that he's going to, you know, be fine. You know, turnovers, it's a concern, but, you know, they stuck with him last year. So I think that he's got a really, really good shot at putting up RB2 numbers. And he's not being drafted as one, so I see him as a nice value.
And then last week we had done a toss-up on Kenyon Drake. We were all pretty down on him. My main reason was he kept breaking off these 30-40-yard runs each game and really inflated his value. It's the same thing we saw with Isaiah Crowell coming out of the 2016 season. And, you know, his stats look great unless you – go down another level and you say, wait a minute, he's getting 5 yards a carry because he's got a 30-yard rush every single game. So that's a bit of fool's gold.
Yep, little bit of risk there. And I think people are disregarding Frank Gore. I think Frank Gore is going to still get plenty of carries. He'll probably be the guy that they feature inside and on the goal line and, you know, as a short yardage specialist type. And I don't know, Miami, I just so hard to peg. What were they doing with all the money they spent at wide receiver? I'm not quite sure what they're doing. I'm not sure that they're going to pass, you know, throw as many passes to the running backs as they did last year. So I like the talent of Drake, but I can't say that I feel really comfortable that he is going to be the kind of guy that's going to average more than 15 or 18 touches a game. To me, and it makes him a little bit risky, but it's a risk reward thing. You know, he showed, got a lot of upside. He's got a lot of big playability, like you said. Somebody that I'd like to have plenty of shares of, but not all of them. He's not someone that I'm going to take every time just because there is that bust factor there. There is the potential that we just saw, you know, a career year type thing early on, and he never lives up to that. So, like I said, a little bit risky. So, you know, he's somebody that, you know, you gaze at cautiously.
And then out of the three rookies I have here, Michael Freeman and Jones, you like Freeman the most out of them?
Well, I think Freeman of the rookies might have the easiest path to the biggest role early on from the get-go. But I think Sony Michel probably, outside of Barkley, has the most upside. He's in the best offense. Yeah. The Patriots over the last 5, 6, 8 years, whatever it is, have easily the most rushing touchdowns in football. That's going to be an area I think they're going to use Michel. And to think that they actually used a first-round pick, even though the rumors were after the draft where they wanted Penny. But – they actually invested a first-round pick in Sony Michel, who has a three-down skill set. I know they're going to mix in other backs. Rex Burkhead, somebody I really, really like as well. James White's got his role as a pass catcher. But I think as long as Sony Michel doesn't have problems holding onto the ball, I think he's a really, really interesting prospect because he lands in such a fantasy-friendly situation there in New England. And when they spent that first round pick on him, it certainly made me very interested. Like, I was not expecting that. I expected New England to take a bigger back, maybe in the third round, maybe somebody like a Royce Freeman or one of these larger 240-pound guys that could have replaced LeGarrette Blount. But instead they went with a three down guy. So that, you know, that needs to be, you know, something that everyone's thinking about. So, July and training camp.
What doomsday scenario for the Patriots backfield, because it never goes as scripted.
It never does. Michael, you're right.
Fumbles it a couple times, and gets in the doghouse with Belichick. Rex Burkhead has a lower body injury and he's out multiple weeks, and then Jeremy Hill is back in our lives again.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to go with the Brandon Bolden wild card there because, you know, they keep that guy every year. I think they just re-signed him again. Obviously, he's more of a special teams kind of guy, but Belichick loves him. He's always there, and he actually has had some opportunities over the years to be, you know, somewhat of a red zone guy, but Jeremy Hill. You know what's weird? Jeremy Hill did not receive a carry inside the 5-yard line last year. The Bengals just said, "Nah, we're done."
Yeah,
and he was really effective. Effective in that role.
And then C.J. Anderson, I think he is getting some love in certain circles. I'm kind of on board with that. I'm curious to see what kind of workload he gets. Obviously, the red zone is limited because of Cam Newton. But, you know, he's a tough runner, a reliable back. He's a good pass protector. So I think you're going to see him a little more than people are giving credit, at least in the early part of this offseason.
Well, I don't think we can argue that he's actually better now and has been better than Jonathan Stewart for a few years there. So, yeah, it should be an interesting situation for him to be potentially fantasy relevant. And you just hope that if he's successful, it doesn't eat too much into Christian McCaffrey's role.
Yep. All right, the next tier 6, is a big one, lumping a lot of people in here. I have Rex Burkhead, Marshawn Lynch, Tevin Coleman, Nick Chubb, Aaron Jones, Carlos Hyde, Marlon Mack, Devontae Booker, Kerryon Johnson, Isaiah Crowell, and Jamal Williams. So this is a whole lot of who knows what at running back. You got some pass catchers in here, some younger guys that have a shot at a role. Anybody pop in that list for you?
Lynch is somebody that I think is being undervalued. People know that he's not going to do much as a pass catcher, but he's actually not as bad as people write him off. And last year he was actually top 20 running back, just that no one's talking about him. If John Gruden if John Gruden is in fact going to go old school and give him a ton of carries, Marshawn Lynch is going to have a lot of value. I don't think Doug Martin is any threat at all to take any of the touches from Marshawn Lynch. Some people are starting to talk about like they're going to go committee. I don't see it at all. Mm-hmm. It won't surprise me if Doug Martin doesn't even make the Raiders. And at that point, they'll just continue the same system of keeping Lynch as their power guy, and they'll go with Washington and Jalen Richard as, you know, the pass catching guys that come in and play a little bit. That's just the way I see it. Like I said, Doug Martin has been under 3 yards a carry two consecutive years. I just don't see how that gets any better there in Oakland. Rex Burkhead, just hit on him a second ago. Love him overall. He's not consistent, but if Sony Michel is not somebody that they're going to give a lot of red zone looks to, then those are going to go to Burkhead, who I want to say had, 8 touchdowns last year. Pretty good shot that he's going to exceed that again. Underrated as a pass catcher. I really, really like him, too. He's somebody that was, you know, somebody I was targeting in the 8th or 9th round all the time. He's starting to creep up to the point now. And in the rest of this tier is your Green Bay tier. Now, this is the conundrum for everybody, because I think most of FF Twitter, we all like Aaron Jones. We all liked Aaron Jones last year. Yeah. And he proved in the limited time that he was healthy and got a chance that he had a ton of upside. He looked like the best back the Green Bay had. However, when he got hurt and Jamal Williams came over, he was, pretty good. And it looked like when Jones got healthy again, McCarthy just decided he was going to stick with Williams. And Williams continued to get red zone looks, and he got most of the goal line carries. And unfortunately, I think that's the kind of situation we're going to walk into. I think that Green Bay is going to stick with a confusing, a fantasy unfriendly committee. But I think it'll be led by Jamal Williams. That's my initial thoughts. I don't think they're going to go away from him. And I want to use Aaron Jones. I think as a change of pace type of guy. They want to limit his touches for some reason. Mm-hmm. Really, and Ty Montgomery, he's the forgotten guy in this whole situation. But it's probably a situation that's best avoided. Even though there's the potential that an RB1, RB2 could emerge from this mess, but right now it's so hard to pinpoint what they're going to do that, you can take your chances. You can, It's pretty common that you can, on the turn of the seventh, eighth round, you can take both guys. You can take Jones and Williams. Mm-hmm. You know, you can handcuff them. But basically, at that point, you're wasting two draft picks for one spot, which is, you know, that's a strategy I never advocate. But really, at this point, yeah, you've got to – if you want to take a Green Bay running back, it just depends on what your strategy is. If you want someone who's probably the safest option, you take Jamal Williams. And if you want to swing for the fences, go with the upside, then you go with Aaron Jones.
Yeah, at Jones' price, he's hard to hit value for me. Williams, as a lead back, a little bit better. But, you know, he is a plain kind of running back. He doesn't flash. And Ty Montgomery I'm fairly high on because I think as long as he's healthy, he's going to get the lion's share of, you know, call it the satellite back role of pass catching, you know, outside runs, creative kind of play calling. And he showed at the beginning of last season he can be dominant in that kind of situation. Give me your take on another draft Twitter darling, Nick Chubb, because people love the talent but not the situation.
Yep, that's the thing. It's similar to Green Bay, but obviously not nearly as much upside in that group. I don't know what they're going to do with Carlos Hyde, with Duke Johnson, with Nick Chubb. And you know, this is not not the most potent offense in football, so it's hard to say. I think Chubb's probably more talented than Hyde, but you know, they did sign Hyde to the point where I want to say it's two years before they can even get out of that deal. So. To me, that's a situation that's probably best avoided. You know, instead of going in that situation, instead of targeting Chubb or Hyde, I would rather just target Duke Johnson, who has the safer role here as their third down specialist, and he's a proven producer. Given a choice, I would take Chubb. Loved him before he got hurt in college, but you know, he did not land in a very ideal spot. I think we all were kind of rooting for him. That would have been a fit, like I mentioned earlier. Chubb on New England would have been really, really interesting if he had lasted into the second or third round. But, you know, the Browns did invest pretty early second on him. So, you know, maybe. But, you know, like I said, Carlos Hyde, he's not a bad player.
Yeah. And then, to keep things kind of short here, give me one more name outside of the tiers we've gone through that we've neglected to mention that you think people should have on their radar.
Well, you're looking at your next tier, and no one can see it, obviously, but you've got those pass-catching backs that we've actually hit it on with Tariq Cohen and Duke Johnson. Chris Thompson from Washington was fantastic last year when he was given a shot, and his role to me is pretty safe. Kenneth Dixon and Buck Allen, like I mentioned earlier, they're possibly taking away passing down work from Alex Collins, but which one? I like actually both of them. Dixon was somebody that was really, really good before he missed all of last season. And Buck Allen, very, very surprising last year. Perhaps he takes that momentum and he takes that job and makes Kenneth Dixon and nothing. I thought Buck Allen was really, really successful for the carry of the game last year. And then who's going to emerge from Indianapolis? Hines. He sounds like they want to use him as a weapon. That's something that's I'm really, really interested in watching this summer. Is Marlon Mack, is he going to come through? Naheem Hines, they've talked about, like I said, they really, really want to use him. And then you've got Wilkins, you know, the other rookie that they drafted too. So that's something I really want to watch. And of course, all that is dependent, like everything else, on Andrew Luck's health.
Right. Yeah, I think Hines is probably weirdly the one with the most secure role because he's such a specialist. I think the other three backs in that backfield do a little bit of everything. And, you know.
Yeah, Hines is kind of guy that you could see playing a lot of snaps in the slot. And that's a situation.
Especially if their defense is terrible.
Right now, Indy's receiving core is far from settled. So that's a role that he could easily sneak into.
And then for me, a guy that we didn't mention, you know, Peyton Barber on the Buccaneers. He's not the flashiest guy. He's not going to set the season on fire, but he projects to be the starter. And you know, possession is 9/10 of the law sometimes, especially at running back. He might be effective enough to hold that job for a big piece of the year. And you know, as a running back that's virtually free, to be able to use him in the first 6 weeks of your season, that'd be an incredible found value. All right. And then let's jump over and do our toss-up for round four on Brandon Cooks. You go ahead, Jody. Give me your input on Brandon Cooks, and then I'll give you my thoughts.
Brandon Cooks, somebody that I'm a known honk for on Twitter. Last year, I wrote a very detailed article after he got traded to the Patriots, and everyone was just writing him off because they thought, oh, New England's just going to spread the ball around. Cooks is going to get lost. And I actually looked at how New England utilized their offense, and I found plays, and I actually diagrammed them with this little app that I downloaded on my phone. And I said that Brandon Cooks was going to be, you know, wide receiver one, just like he had been the previous 2 years. I turned out to be right. There, a lot of people were. Now, I think when you walk away from, you look at Cooks' numbers last year, you're actually probably a little disappointed, but you shouldn't be. He turned out to be wide receiver 7 in standard, wide receiver 15 in PPR. Third straight year with 1,000-plus yards. Third straight year, he scored 7-plus touchdowns, and New England mainly used him as a deep threat. He put up really, really good yards per catch numbers. I think he's going to a very, very interesting role here with the Rams. I still like Brandon Cooks. I still think he's a really, really good value, and people are sleeping on him again. He should not have gotten to the point by putting up 3 straight seasons he's been a top 15 PPR receiver. And he's been a wide receiver 1 in standard for 3 straight years. He should not be slipping to the point where he's into the 4th and the 5th round as a wide receiver 20 or wide receiver 25 or wide receiver 18. Exactly. He shouldn't even be that far down. I think, once again, he's going to be a really good value. And I'm going to own, I already do own, quite a few shares of Brandon Cooks on my teams once again.
Yeah, I'm fighting to not draft him in the 4th round and the next couple best balls I do, because I think in almost every single best ball I've done, I've drafted him in the 4th round. So if you're in a draft with me, he's not making the 5th. and like you said, you look at it's a short career, but he's always put up, you know, wide receiver top 15 numbers.
Don't you hate that? And, like when you draft a lot like we do, and you keep seeing the same guys in the same round, and you really love the guy, you just like have to take him. But then you get to the point where you're like, I've got to diversify, because if this guy tears his ACL in August and misses the whole year, I'm screwed in every league. So sometimes you have to make that tough decision. But
yeah, I'm hoping to get him to fall to the 5th a little bit, but I tried it once for this week and it didn't happen. It went a few picks before me. But and the thing that solidified Cooks for me was actually an article you wrote about targets that have been vacated. And you look at St. Louis, between Sammy Watkins and Tavon Austin, I believe they're 92 vacated targets. That's going to Brandon Cooks. And then Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, they're just not as good of an athlete as Brandon Cooks are. So he's going to siphon targets from those two guys. In addition to Todd Gurley, probably not getting targeted quite as heavily as he did in the passing game. That's not really what he did a great job with it last year, but that's not his MO necessarily. Cooks is going to get his 115 to 120 targets with ease, I think. And who knows, maybe Sean McVay falls in love with him and he gets 130 targets and he has a career season. You know, a fourth round pick for that is incredible value if things go right, and you've got a really good floor, like we mentioned.
Use him a little bit more in the red zone than the Patriots were willing to, but I don't know that that's going to happen with Cooper Kupp there, because Cooper Kupp was a top 5 in red zone targets last season. They really like him in that area. So I'm not sure that that's going to happen, but I'm writing down right now to make sure that if I'm in any drafts with you, to make sure I start looking at Sammy Watkins. I mean, look at Brandon Cooks in round 4 before you get to him. So,
right. Yeah. And, it is going to be hard for him to score touchdowns. It's not really his strongest suit, but touchdowns are fickle.
Where he's finished a wide receiver 1 in standard 3 straight years without the touchdowns, I think he had 9, 8, and 7. I'm happy with that. If he gets six or more, he's probably going to exceed 1,000 yards. Like you said, the target numbers are going to be there, and those numbers continue in this Rams offense. I don't see any reason why he's not going to remain another wide receiver one yet again, and you know, one you're going to be able to get at a pretty significant discount.
Yeah. All right, so that's our toss up for Cooks. We're both in agreement, a great value in the fourth. Let's wrap up, Jody, by each throwing out a sleeper. It can be any position. You have somebody in mind you want to give the listeners as a late round guy.
Savvy people listening this early are probably on board with him. But what about Geronimo Allison there in Green Bay? He's pretty much guaranteed at this point. I read an article that was in the, I want to say it was the Green Bay Gazette, that said that he is so much higher as the penciled in number three than any of the other receivers that they just drafted, three kids. He's so much higher than them that it's pretty much a dead certain that he's going to open the season as their number three receiver. Really interesting, because last year when he got 70% of snaps in four games, and those were easily his best games. His biggest target numbers and his yardage output game in those games, obviously. But he actually meshed really well with Aaron Rodgers. I know Aaron Rodgers was hit and miss last year. Mm-hmm. But it's a usage thing with Green Bay. Jeff Ratcliffe from Pro Football Focus says that when the Packers go to two wide sets, which is, I looked at it, it's 11% of the time, it's Randall Cobb that comes off the field. Geronimo Allison would stay out on the field. Mm-hmm. So you're talking Allison and Davante Adams are going to be in two wide sets. And three wide sets, which Green Bay ran 60% of the time, now you're talking Cobb and Adams taking the majority of the attention from the cornerbacks, which is going to leave Allison in some pretty favorable conditions. If what Jeff Ratcliffe thinks holds true and he stays in on two wide sets, that means that Geronimo Allison is looking at about a 95% snap share for Green Bay. So you're getting a Green Bay receiver that's going to play 90 to 95% of snaps if that's how it plays out. And Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, and you're able to get this guy like in the last round, because he, you know, for basic drafts of maybe 16 rounds, he's not even going drafted in most of them. You're talking about a guy that's well outside the top 150. He's a guy that I get in like almost everywhere. He's starting to creep up a little bit because people have kept talking about him.
You know, kind of briefly, but like you said, it's not everywhere. And everybody's trying to figure out which of those three rookies is going to be the breakout guy, the Packers. And I think you're exactly right. The breakout receiver is probably the guy that's already on the team, knows the system. Aaron Rodgers mm-hmm. has some faith in.
And let's not forget Ty Montgomery there. The guy's perfectly capable of moving to receiver or playing that role plenty too. So there's not going to be probably a lot of opportunities for Moore, who probably is the one that's going to emerge there. But there's probably not going to be a lot of opportunities for him to get on the field.
Right. And then for me, my sleeper is going to be Jake Butt. He's got a great name, makes a great jersey. But his play on the field is also likely to be good. You know, he lost a season to the ACL last year as a rookie. Rookie tight ends never pan out anyway. He's going to, you know, he was able to practice some and start to get his feet wet and learn the system. So he's not starting from scratch. He's been with the organization now for however many 12 plus months. And he's gonna win the starting job. I'm fairly confident in that. And his ADP on MFL right now is 231. So, you know, as a third tight end or second tight end there, as a guy in a league that's fairly deep, you know, a 14 or 15 team league or any kind of tight end premium league, he's a guy to consider stashing on your bench and seeing what happens there. Because Denver is a fairly conservative offense. They may throw to the tight end a good bit. They didn't do it last year because they kind of had basically journeymen at the position. But if Butt shows some of the skill that got him drafted fairly highly coming out of college out of Michigan, I think he could be a breakout tight end. That's what we got time for tonight, guys. Jody, thank you for joining me.
Absolutely. Anytime. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, Jody, you can find his work over on Fantasy Pros. He's got a lot lot of great stat stuff coming out, like you mentioned, dealing with targets, vacated targets. I think you said you have an AFC target article yep. coming up.
Vacated targets and my predictions of how those opportunities will play out. Yeah, that'll be coming out in the next day or two. And then after that, we'll be looking at those interesting red zone numbers using the expected points ratio that I mentioned on earlier. I'm trying to figure out how to put all that data together, but I think it's going to be really, really cool when I get it worked out.
Great stuff. All right, guys, have a good night.